This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Trans POV is more than just the trans narrative. There are the usual questions about the trans person's earliest memories and their various stages of gender exploration. We have already discussed the differences between transsexual, transgender, and gender fluid, and that gender identity is different from gender expression, which again is different from sexual orientation. While I am usually open to answering other people's respectful questions, which no one would ever dare to ask of other transgender people, it is clear that simple definitions aren't enough anymore, and we need to be talking about lived realities, and sometimes the voices we need to hear from aren't always trans. It's time for a bit of Trans 201. Welcome to Trans Point of View. Welcome back. You are listening to Trans Point of View. My name is Michelle Shepherd. Now, what I'm kind of focusing on at the moment, I've got it's coming up to New Year's, and I'm thinking New Year's resolutions, and the most common New Year's resolution is we always seem to want to go to the gym and get in better shape. Or when we come out as transgender, we have this thing about, I want to lose weight, I want to be more feminine, or if you're a trans man, you want to become more masculine. But when going to the gym, sometimes there's that disconnect. So today, my guest, their name is Bowie. And Bowie is a personal coach, physical fitness coach. Tell me about yourself, Bowie.
So I like to call myself a fitness coach because I find it's just a more diverse name. It kind of includes a lot of more stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm non-binary, and I'm just passionate about training and helping people whenever I can, really.
Now, I think we did a show together on Family Matters, we talked about a lot of trans youth, I believe it was, and talking about doing fitness stuff for the trans youth out there. So what kind of work have you been doing with your company that you do?
So we run online fitness coaching for the queer community with a focus on helping trans people to kind of help build that outer image that fits their inner identity. It's really something that I'm passionate about, as like a lot of my training, my personal training for myself, is about shaping my body to feel more connected with who I am inside as well.
Okay. Now, as you and I have been talking before we did this show, I said, look, you know, I sent you some stats about myself as well. Now, I'm a 6'3" trans woman, and I'm not exactly the skinniest or the most, stereotypical of women, obviously. But one of the things I was important for me was getting your input and opinion, because I found that when I was going out in early days of transition, I was either given advice to do starvation diets, I went to go see personal trainers, and they constantly wanted to put me on weights after doing weight training as a man before. But then at the same time, they didn't know what programs to put me on, whether I should put me on a female program or a male program. Do you have any input on this as well?
I don't think there is actually a male and female program. I think the concept of that is just madness, really. It's all about the individual. So there's always training that you can do that will build like lean, strong muscle without creating bulk. There's ways that if you want to bulk up, you can do heavier weights. There's always a way to create something that's for the individual person, regardless of gender. And to be told that there's something otherwise is just... I can't believe someone would actually say that to you.
Yeah, look, wow. Most people are like, okay, go out and buy yourself some new activewear, make sure it's like pink, and then we look good in the gym and go on the treadmill. Oh, and I'm going, why? That is, I'm like, that's what I see a lot of cis women do. And I'm going, and it's funny, I actually had a conversation with my mom because I was away for a couple of weeks seeing my mom back in the U.S. And I threw on some shorts and just an old, actually same color, green colored shirt you have on now.
Yeah.
And my mom goes, you're a girl now. Why don't you go buy something pink and put that on? Oh. I'm going, Mom, I'm just going to be sweating. I just want to get it out of my system.
Yeah.
But there's this, like, everyone thinks there's, like, this gendering even within the gym space.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's sheer madness. It just shocks me. And I think so much of that kind of deters anyone from wanting to go into that environment anyway, because it comes with a just judgment. It's like, you're not wearing this name brand of clothing, therefore you mustn't be able to work out as well as me wearing my Lululemons. It's like, what does that even mean?
$79 what do you call them, leggings and stuff is not going to make me actually go better at the gym.
No, it doesn't actually do anything for you at all except for like fuel consumerism.
Yeah, exactly. And so, look, and I don't subscribe to most of the same stereotypical stuff. I'm very much like, I go to the beat of my own drum. Yeah. I learn my own stuff because half the time I found that the education that's out there is based on sort of stereotyping and things like that we seem to subscribe to as trans women, especially. So if I was going to be coming out as a trans woman like I was 4 years ago and starting on this journey of going from, as photos you saw me before, as a more bulked up man going to the gym, what would be one of the first pieces of advice you'd give?
I would just say start where you're comfortable at. Like, I know that might be hard because there's so much discomfort within yourself already in the process of that transition. But like, when it comes to getting a bit active to try and lose that little bit of weight, like, wear what you're comfortable wearing and do what you feel ready to do. Even if that's going out for a walk, like, you don't have to jump straight into the gym. Like, gyms are so heteronormative, and they're like, being a trainer myself, I've gone to gyms and felt quite uncomfortable, and I know what I'm doing there. And you know, so for someone who's not even from that kind of situation to have to walk into that, it can be so confronting. And so, yeah, the best thing I'd say, start with walking. Like, wear something comfortable. Find a podcast, some music that makes you feel good, and go for a half hour, 1 hour walk, and do that regularly, and that's going to put you well on your way to getting started with everything that you need.
Nice. See, I found myself when I was at the gym, even presenting as a man going to the gym, like, I'd go based off the advice of the personal trainers, and they were always about, you know, pay the money to get in, and they were constantly on you, but more for like the money side of things, where I found I walked in, looked at all these machines going, what the hell am I doing? And I find it overly intimidating. And next thing you know, I'm stuck with a gym membership.
Yeah. Yeah. So having a gym subscription, it doesn't guarantee you any progress other than the fact that you have access to the facility. Personally, I find gym equipment to be kind of pointless because they're all about like isolation of movement. It's like, sit on this machine and move your arms. And it's like, okay, but if that was outside in a practical situation, when are you ever in a circumstance where that's kind of the time that you're applying strength? It's like, I've got to lift this box. Let me sit down and lean forward. And now I'm going to pick up this box because that's what I've trained to do.
Exactly.
My background is in kettlebells. So a kettlebell is like a cast iron ball with a handle. Mm-hmm. They come in like heaps of different weights. But the beautiful thing about them is everything that you do with them always forces you to use your whole body to stabilize. And it has such a great practical application outside with everything that you do, whether like you could be walking along and slip over, like having the ability to kind of catch yourself from falling is, you know, something that working out on a gym equipment or, you know, do it on a squat machine, it's like, doesn't give you that same kind of reflexive strength.
Now, one of my favorite friends I fall on Facebook is Marie. It's pronounced so differently. It depends where you are. Like, I look at it and say Yana Marie, but it's, you know, Jenna Marie. And she used to be known by as Matt Kroc, who was a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
And she is she's beautiful, by the way. And she has, it's okay name going by her old name. Mm. I don't say dead name. I hate the term dead name. Mm. But she's very comfortable with that because she knows where she comes from and things like that. We're friends. But you look at what she was before and look at her now. She looks magnificent. Like, she's bulky and huge.
Oh, she's incredible. I'm so jealous.
Yeah. And, but she's so warm and so warm. She did a documentary as well, but she doesn't care about that bulk, which it inspired me a bit more to actually go back and say, you know, it doesn't really matter. But I know a lot of trans women, when they come out, and I know I'm focusing on trans women because I'm a trans woman myself, and there seems to be a bigger disconnect with the gym, I think, with trans women. Mm. There's this fear of touching weights or fear of actually doing anything that promotes any kind of muscle building.
Yeah.
Is there myth around these sorts of things? Or
absolutely. So weights, it's so good for your body because they build muscle density. And when you have denser muscles, that increases your bone density. So it just makes your body stronger in general. So you only build muscle when you start doing like heavy weights, low reps. If you're not doing that style of training, you're not going to gain bulk.
Okay.
So it's all about, the movements that you make. So the weights themselves, just in general, are not going to cause you to gain muscle mass. I mean, they'll make you tone, and they'll make you lean, and they'll make you strong, but they don't have to make you bulky at all.
So we're looking at low weight high reps.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think that's where people just get that sort of disconnect, because I know myself, I've had that because of lack of education. I mean, look, I can make your house so you can speak to your lamp until it turns itself on and off. I can take your television apart, fix your iPhone. But when it comes to actually the biomechanics of actually trying to what makes and builds and loses muscle and fat, I couldn't tell you. So I've looked at weights myself again going, yeah, but if I touch that, I notice that my muscles are bigger again. So there's always that fear.
Yeah, yeah. And there's so much just misinformation out there in the fitness industry, and so many kind of fads and just trends, and it all just becomes so confusing for anyone to really kind of follow and understand. And you can Google search it, and there's like so many different opinions based on, what that particular trainer is, that you just have no idea kind of where to even start, what to look at, who to believe.
I'm the exact same way with so what's got me curious is obviously most of us who come out as trans or say non-binary or whatever, we always get inspired to go, I want to do something for the community. I want to do something for the community, like myself doing radio or doing the other stuff. Other than apart from, say, being non-binary, what is it sort of what inspired you to actually start doing what you do specifically for trans?
I just think that being able to have support, like I'm from regional Queensland, so up there, I didn't have that sort of support. There's no support for trans people up there. There's not support for gays and lesbians up there. So it was quite a hostile environment, and I didn't really fully transition until I moved down to Melbourne, where I felt like there was safety in doing so. And I just think since then, just seeing what it's like to not have anything there, or people who actually understand what it's like to transition in any form, whether it's socially or physically, and have that lived experience to be able to relate to other people within the trans community. So I really, really feel that having socially transitioned myself and kind of working towards more physical transition, that I kind of understand where everyone is coming from, and I feel that just allows me to kind of get a better idea of exactly what you want, as opposed to, you've said, the trainers who told you you've got to have that man's program or that woman's program. It's like, no, it's not. You don't. It doesn't have to be like that. And I just would love to show people in the trans community that there's an option out there that will help them so much to identify with their body as much as they can.
Now, you and I talked about, say, myself and coming further into, going on 4 years within trans. Well, it's 4 years now in transition. So here I am, 6'3". Now I've actually put on weight. Now, when I started all of this, I went down to about 92 kilos. Mm. And now I'm up to 120. I know that sounds horrible, but I'm as always, everything I do, I put myself out here as the guinea pig and to use myself as an example. So obviously I put on a fair bit of more weight, not so much muscle mass.
Yeah.
So where do I start? I mean, you've taken a look at some of the stats I've sent you. I've got a higher, heart rate that's going on now. I'm not sleeping. Very active. I know I've fallen into the category, which a lot of people, not just trans, do, but I fall in the category of dating is not been a very successful thing for me. You become that bit of isolation, even though I'm quite open and out there with friends and family that I have here, but that intimacy is no longer there. Mm. So I found I've fallen back on the guy thing and drown myself in work. And that it is known that men do that more. It's not a gendering thing. It's a known fact. Eating. I have actually fallen the trap of eating for comfort.
Yeah, that's a big one, I think, for so many different people.
Yeah.
And it just comes down to the kind of the relationship that you have with food, and it becomes a vicious cycle because you'll feel like a bit down, whether it's like a bit depressed or anxious. So you'll eat because it gives you that kind of sense of comfort. It gives you certainty. You know you're going to eat something that you're going to enjoy. It's familiar to you. So it has all these little aspects of stuff that you're going to be like, oh, that makes me feel good and happy about myself. But then after you've eaten that it's not there anymore. And then you like guilt follows and you think, oh, I've eaten so much of it. And oh, I feel horrible about myself. I shouldn't have done that. And it turns from this little moment of comfort to this negative cycle that then follows. And it's a limiting belief. So it's about trying to recreate your relationship with food and how it can turn from that negative cycle to something more positive and constructive. But it can take a lot of kind of really having to look within and reflect on why food has become your comfort in the first place. So it can be quite a journey just in breaking that cycle.
Yeah, look, some of the advice I got in the early days of when the transition was, eat an apple, a black cup of coffee for breakfast, you know, lunch is a can of tuna and dinner was like a piece of fish and veggies. And I'm going, okay.
Sounds horrible.
I'm just going to slip my wrist now. Like, no one told me as a woman I was going to starve. So,
oh, calorie restrictions in eating just is painful. It's so horrible. It's not enjoyable. And when you're not actually looking forward to eating, it makes it so easy to not stick to those kind of, it's a diet. Like dieting is horrible and it's all about restriction. And when we're restricted from something, there's a part in our brain that doesn't get that reward. And it's like, why am I doing this when I don't get any reward for it? And then you get to a point and it might be 3 days, it may be 3 weeks, maybe 3 months down track. And it's just like, nah, screw it. That's it. And you'll have this massive binge. And then you're just like, why did I do this? And you'll never stick to it because dieting like that is just horrible.
No.
It's so unenjoyable.
See, I did in the early days just to sort of, I was real determined. Mm. I was damn determined because I wanted to get down to a certain point because this is just what I was just getting myself on a good start. And everyone kept going on about how guy fat, now this is a big one within the trans women community, that you need to strip down all of your guy fat before you start transition, because then you put on the other fat, you become this round ball if you don't. And truth, myth, I'm not too sure. You probably can help with that. But all I know is I'm a very huggy, cuddly person. I'm just, everyone's happy to see me, hence why I've got the name Mama Mish. But Mama Mish is not a very friendly person when she's hangry.
Yeah. So,
and I don't want to go back and do that. So what about that myth with the boy fat and the chick fat? Like, is there a
difference? I've never heard of man fat and lady fat, except for placement on the body. So men and women carry fat in different areas, but I don't necessarily think it's got a gender. Your body doesn't identify it as anything other than a storage of excess energy. That's all fat is. So I don't think...
Look, if we can find a way to get it from here down to my ass, then I'm, you know, you'll be my new best friend.
Yeah.
So what have you done much with say adults apart from the youth or?
I've worked with adults. I haven't had the opportunity to work with a lot of trans adults apart from myself. But it's very similar. Like with taking the hormones, it's going to give you those female traits. So it becomes kind of fat deposits in the same areas as a cis woman would have them. But it just comes down to just being aware of what you're eating. It's not about restricting calories. It's about eating until you feel satisfied but not overeating. Like diet makes up like 80% of any weight loss or weight gain. It's massive. Exercise has such a small effect to what eating does, and it's just crazy because I think there's quite a bit of confusion with that sort of thing. It's like, oh, I train all the time, and it's like, but then you eat really bad stuff and you can never out train a bad diet because no. it just is not how it works. So it's just about eating until you're satisfied, not until you're over full, because I think that's a big one. People kind of lose the awareness of when their stomach says, okay, like, I've had enough. And you're like, but there's still food there. Like,
yeah, of course.
I have to finish you.
I found that in the States. Like, in the States, we could easily, like, you can go and just eat, say, the chicken and take everything else home if you want to. Mm. Where here, there's that, if you buy it, you pretty much have to eat it.
Yeah.
Or you can't take it with you.
Yeah, that's right.
But that's not so much the excuse. But, you know, but I myself, I fall in the trap of, you know, I just really enjoy my food. Mm. I can't help it.
Yeah.
So, but that's my girlfriend. That's she loves me, but not in a good way. That's an abusive relationship.
Yeah. And you still can enjoy your food. So eating slowly is a great one. So what happens is when we eat, it takes 20 minutes for our stomach to tell our brains that we're actually full. So if you can take a meal and eat it slowly over 20 minutes, at that 20 minute point, regardless of how far you've got through a meal, you'll find it's like, oh, I'm feeling satisfied. So even though it's delicious and there's stuff there, you'll be able to have the awareness. It's about kind of reconnecting your brain with your stomach and getting everything talking to itself again so that you can start to feel those hunger cues. Because mm-hmm. a lot of the time, especially in Western society, we have such an abundance of food that people don't really know what it is to feel actually hungry. It's like, oh, it's 12 o'clock. This is the time I usually eat. I better eat something. Or so there's always that abundance there. And it kind of leads us to forget that if we eat till we're satisfied, not till we're full, only eat when we're actually feeling hungry. Because a lot of time, if you're bored, that's another way of people will kind of fill that boredom with eating. It's like, I'm bored. Oh, I'm just going to eat something.
Well, I know myself, like when I'm at work, like for breakfast, I'll tend to have, say, I'm really doing my best not to get like the carbs, like the toasts and things like that. Like I'll, you know, I've made that change, like say, you know, again, black coffee, or maybe go and do something simple, like maybe some egg, like an egg or something. I'll cook it like an egg white, you know, like an ever breakfast or something like that. But I find then by like 9, 10 o'clock, I'm already hungry again and I'm drinking already heaps of water. Is that disconnect between brain and stomach or?
It can also be that like when you, because that sounds like a really kind of restricted breakfast as well. So if you haven't actually eaten enough to give you that energy to get to through your next point, it can be that. So that comes back to that deficit in calories again, okay, and kind of that restriction that's there. So it's not about, like, there's a big myth around, you know, oh, don't eat carbs or don't eat sugar and don't eat this and don't eat that. And it's like, you can eat what you want, just eat it in moderation.
Yeah.
It's all about control. Food itself isn't bad. There's no bad food. It's there's not, I mean, I wouldn't recommend,
I like this, hold on.
I wouldn't recommend eating like a lot of deep fried and fatty foods, but there's nothing to say that you can't have a small serve of that, you know, every now and then. So
yeah, so my lifestyle in the States while I was away, 3 days of eating chicken wings in a row was not exactly a good idea. I get it, I understand. Universe, stop telling me this by bringing Bowie in here. I get it.
Yeah, so food isn't bad. It's, and I think society and especially the fitness industry, and with all these kind of eating fads, like you can have a juice diet. It's like, why? Why would you want a juice diet? Like when we eat, you've got to think, is this something that you can sustain long term? So that's what it comes down to. Diets are short term and not sustainable. If you learn to eat in a way that you can do for the rest of your life, that's going to be really helpful for yourself physically, mentally, and like emotionally, then that's a pattern that you need to follow. Because going like up and down, and it's like, oh, this is the latest thing, I'm going to go keto this month, you know, I'm going to cut all carbs and just eat fat. It's like, why?
Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Somebody said to me, oh, you should try keto. And I'm going, and I looked at it, it was like, I think I'd have a heart attack eating that.
And it's just like, it's all up, and that comes down to like, it's all about restriction. It's like, oh, you can eat this, but don't eat that. Or eat this, but don't eat that. And you got paleo, let's eat like cavemen. How do we know what cavemen ate like?
Yeah, no,
like, it was
exactly
so long ago, and those times are no longer around.
Well, one thing I've tried doing, and I made a change, like since we've started having this conversation, you know, I've got my, you know, fitness watch on. I've got my, you know, I've downloaded an app and I'm taking a look at that. Now, one thing I didn't really think about before, which seems like a common sense to me, you know, add your opinion on this if you want, but normally in the past, whenever I did stuff like Weight Watchers or any of the others, they give you a set number of calories and you have to eat those calories.
Yeah.
Well, there was actually an option to change for the calorie thing to, I don't remember what it was called. I think it was like, they've got your numbers, and then there was like another one where you sort of like earn your calories based on the movement you do.
Yeah, okay.
And so you had your certain number that was set based on your size and whatever, but then I'd throw and say, okay, I had a cup of coffee, I had an apple, I had a capsicum, I went and had something else, whatever. And then, but if I got up and moved, it said, okay, you can have these many more calories to add to your diet if you whatever. And I said, that made more sense because I'm actually earning what I'm eating, but where is all this?
Well, it's kind of like when you exercise, you burn calories. So let's say you go for a jog and you burn 200 calories. It's like, oh, now you can eat an extra 200 calories.
Yeah.
It makes the jog redundant because that extra 200 calories you've burnt is going to put back into your body with more food. So it's kind of like this vicious cycle of continuously keeping you at this one level because you're not actually allowing your body to kind of burn through kind of what excess that you have on you, because that's how it works. Like when you start burning calories, fat is just stored energy. So start eating just a regulated diet. Doesn't have to be restricted, just, you know, portion controlled, at least like just 4 good meals a day, and a bit of exercise. Sleep is another huge one for weight loss as well, surprisingly. If you don't get at least 8 hours of sleep a night, your mental capacity would come up as though you have a blood alcohol reading of 0.05.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, it really limits your mental capacity. And when we're tired and when we're in that state, willpower is down. So the more fatigued you are, the easier it's going to be for you to give in to those cravings and those kind of bad habits that if you were a little bit more alert, you may be able to kind of be like, No, I've got this self-control.
This makes sense because myself, sleep is a horrible thing for me. Like for between running a main job, building my own business, running a radio show, flying between, say, here in Sydney, running around all over town, also parenting, I find sometimes I get to 10 o'clock, I'm waking at 1, 3 o'clock in the morning. Are there certain things to do, like say before bed, that you'd recommend to help sort of contribute to better sleep for this whole thing?
I think if you can start like a routine, like a wind down routine, because a lot of time, I'm a bad one for this too, because like running my own business, I'm up and I'm on my laptop and I'm working. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's late. I better go to sleep now. But my brain is like so stimulated. It's like, no, think about this. And you've just been doing that. Don't stop. So trying to kind of create this cutoff point where it's like, okay, now the laptop shuts, this goes away. I start kind of this routine where I'll, you know, have a shower and I'll start preparing for bed, and it allows my mind time to just slow down and kind of get into more of a habit of not constantly being switched on.
Yeah, my worst is when I've got like, say, I remember on International Day Against Homophobia, Iba Hobbit Day, whatever you want to call it. There's too many acronyms in our community.
Yeah, right.
but then I'm laying there and it's like, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm up, I'm going through my speeches in my head, I've got my phone on, I'm doing recording, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, I've got to focus on this, and all of a sudden my brain's going, ladies and gentlemen, it's Mambo number 5, and then all of a sudden there goes the rest of my evening, and I found that I was so buggered by the end of the day that I ended up having a fall and hurting myself while I was going to a train because I was just so out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one I think people aren't really aware of, and just how important it is to take the time. And it's hard. People's like, I can't find the time. It's like, you can't find the time to go to sleep.
Have
a good sleep. And it's got so many more implications with your health that leads to increased heart disease and just general physical well-being. So your risk of mortality, I think, increases the less sleep you have, just kind of, you know, staying alive there. Have a nap, you know, it makes
breathing.
You live longer.
So I know you're gonna use me as a guinea pig. We're gonna have a bit of a project, and we're gonna work together and see how to change Mama Mish's lifestyle and whatever.
Right.
And so we can share this with the wider community.
Yeah.
And you know, I will take photos of my fat ass and and we'll, yeah, we'll put some plans together and I'll show, you know, what I'm doing and try to go and do that as well. But if anybody wanted to do the same thing with you, somebody wanted to follow up with you and actually, hey, you know, Bowie, I want to go and do what you're doing to Mama Mish and help do these sorts of things, how can they reach out to you and get your services?
So we're really active on Facebook. We have a page, Fearless Movement Collective is our business name.
Okay.
You can contact us there. We have a website, which is www.fearlessmovement.co.
Okay.
So you can contact us on either of those places, and we'll be there ready to have a chat and help out however we can.
Sounds great. Well, so make sure I share this on my trans POV page as well, and on Twitter and stuff through our accounts. But we'll make sure we take some photos and post it in as sort of a project, so people can follow along, so they can see how it sort of works out.
Yes, sounds
awesome.
Fantastic.
Bowie, thank you so much for coming in today and sharing with us your insights and all this. And I invite you to come be part of some more of the body image shows that I'm doing, to talk about, you know, better body image, better just the connection between, you know, mind, body, all that kind of crap. Mm, so it's not crap, but you know what I mean. Anyway, thank you. You have been listening. We'll talk to you soon. And thank you for listening today. If you do want to reach out to us, you can get us on email, transpov@joy.org.au. You can also get us on Facebook, which is transpov on joy. You can get us on Twitter, transpov, or you can just come to joy.org.au and just follow up what's going on here at Joy in general. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organization. Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.